And welcome to another episode of Planetary Makeover. And tonight, our guest is Gabrielle Renee, who is a community organizer with a housing orientation. She has both an educational and professional background in finance and taxation, which was her career, and in some ways still is, until her life took an extraordinary turn into becoming a community organizer and serving families. Gabrielle sees herself as fortunate and having a rich life, and this does, as a result, give her a lot to offer both tenants and homeowners. And another way she performs this public service is through her own show on social media entitled Let's Talk Money with Friends. So, greetings, Gabrielle.
Yes, good evening, David. It is always great to be with you. This is what our third show together, something to that effect.
I'm losing
I'm
count.
excited to be here again. Yes.
Well, that was just a little intro, but I'm looking to you for the real intro. So give us a glimpse into your life story and how it steered you towards a life of service.
Yeah, thank you for asking. I almost said we. So I speak French. I was born in Haiti, came here when I was a teenager, went to school, high school, and then college, couple university degrees. And my career, as you said, I started in banking and then I became a financial advisor. And at one point, I actually owned a mortgage company. So I actually helped families here in the Boston area. We financed and acquired their first homes or even second investment properties. So I'm always very well versed in the financial services field, but I didn't know much about community organizing. I didn't know much about housing justice and housing rights. In 2008, when the financial crisis hit the world, especially the United States, everybody was facing challenges. And that's when I became one of the victims, I would say, because I had made decisions based on information that I had at the time. But when 2008 came, those decisions that I had made were not the best decision financially. So when I tried to kind of rectify situations and rectify those decisions with my bank, that's when they basically helped, they neglected to do what they needed to do. Although, if you remember, that Obama had stimulated the economy with millions, if not, I think it was like billions that he had given to banks to help them so that they could trickle it down to help families. But many of the families that I worked with, and also myself, were not as fortunate. So we didn't get the help that we needed. But I realized that the reason that we had not gotten the help that we needed is because we didn't know our rights. So coming to the community organization that you and I are familiar with, I've learned about my rights. And since then, not only do I know the financial aspect of the system, but I also know the legal part of it, where you are empowered with knowledge so that you can represent yourself or be part of a community so that you can fight together to keep what is yours. Because a home, we say in our organization that housing is a human right. And when someone doesn't have a habitable or affordable home, it gets very difficult to do anything else. It is the cure to all of our ailments. So therefore, for me, I always say it has been good for me to have been impacted, because to being impacted, now I'm thoroughly equipped to help, and to not only help myself, but to help my community.
And it's ironic, the trauma that you experience actually made you an even more effective community organizer.
Right, and person.
Yeah, and on a subject that we've mentioned on this show before, housing. And if you've seen the show before, you know that our focus is the emergence of the world teacher Maitreya and his group, the Masters of Wisdom. Just to give everyone a quick recap, they're not religious figures per se. They're not political leaders. They're not looking for followers, and they don't want you to believe in them. They want you to experience them. And their priorities are our priorities too, and Gabrielle's: healthcare, housing, education, justice and equality, world peace, and a clean environment. And that was inspired by some of the writers we mentioned, author, artist, and esotericist Benjamin Krem, also Alice Bailey, and Helena Rorick, and Madame Blavatsky. And a lot of this you can learn about at www.share-international.us. That's share-international.us. So let's continue with your story. One of the things you had mentioned to me was that you had watched a lot of shows and documentaries on people having near-death experiences. And one particular struck me that you mentioned, that man who had three different careers, and one that you wouldn't think was the most, turned out to be the most important. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is nowadays my guilty pleasure. I really enjoy watching these shows because, I mean, these documentaries, I guess they call them, because of the fact that you get an opportunity, those who have had those experiences, the near death experiences they've had, they get an opportunity to really see life in a different light, so to speak. Kind of, yeah, in a different light. Because of the fact that this one particular documentary that I saw, this gentleman, he, when he was a single guy, he was in marketing. And marketing can be very lucrative, especially if you are in New York and in marketplaces like that. And he had made a lot of money. But when he got married, his wife decided that we don't want to be in New York or in that marketplace. We want to go live in the South. So he ended up moving to Florida. When he got to Florida, he tried to get a job in marketing and it wasn't working because Florida is not as, that environment is not conducive to that. So he ended up being an EMT driver because he had to make money to take care of his wife and his wife. He had a growing family. He's like, you know what? I'm gonna do what I need to do. So, as an EMT driver, from the time he was like in his mid-30s all the way to like late 40s, he did that. And he said that it was very tiring. It was a lot of stress on his body because, you know, when people calling you 911, they are at their wits' ends, right? You're the only help that they can call. So, he was very stressed. And he said, you know, after a while, he started thinking about, you know, what else do I want to do? In his late 40s, he decided, you know what, I need another career. So he was talking to a friend. He ended up becoming a jewelry dealer. And he, like, you know, kind of the industry kind of fell on his laps, right? Well, when he had his near-death experience, I'm not sure exactly what happened. I think he had like an accident. And then he had an outer body, you know, that's usually how it happens. But he said that when he was doing his life review, of all the three jobs that he had, the one that was most revered and most respected and most he felt like the most loved about was the EMT, the one that where he didn't make a lot of money. However, he had helped a lot of people. So definitely it got me thinking that when you are someone who's helping and taking care of community and individuals and others, you know, as a believer, I'm a Christian. So the Bible talks about like loving God and loving your neighbors as yourself. When you go out above and beyond to take care of other people, definitely it's the most honorable thing you can do. So going back to me, I went into finance because I wanted to be in a lucrative industry, you know, the money business. But I realized that, you know, since I've become part of community as a community activist and organizer, I realized that, you know, definitely this is truly the calling that I've always had on my life. But I didn't know about it. I had to have gone through, this guy went through an accident or near-death experience. Me, I went through a financial crisis, which led me to my calling, and I'm very grateful for that because it has made me a much better person. And yeah.
That's amazing, amazing story. You reminded me of something that I was going to forget to mention.
Yeah.
And that is Another quote from the world teacher Maitreya, which I should probably spell for the audience. That's Maitreya, Maitreya.
That's right.
And he had said in one of his many messages, to love man and to love God is the same. And I think he added, this is a simple concept, but up till now, difficult for men to grasp.
Right.
Because so many people say, oh, I love God, but they sort of hold their fellow man in contempt, not realizing that their fellow man is a divine being. Part of what underlies the information that we share at Planetary Makeover through all of those authors and the show itself is what they call the ageless wisdom teaching, which is supposed to be about 100,000 years old and underlies our philosophical and religious and cultural and artistic creations, our civilization, in effect. And that's where this information came from, the notion that mankind is divine and that we are in a sense, a God in becoming with a small g. And you demonstrate this, Gabrielle, in the love you have for your fellow man and for the people whom you assist, the service that you provide. And our understanding from the Ageless Wisdom teaching is that service is what the universe runs on. It's all your soul knows is service and sacrifice. Not sacrifice in a negative sense, sacrificing the lower for the higher. So, on that score, I'm wondering, Gabrielle, what does creating community mean to you?
Definitely, it's everything. For me, it's everything. You're talking about service. I always say love never fails. And to me, if you're not loving God, you're not loving your neighbors, you're not able to love even yourself because your neighbors are a reflection of who you are. If you cannot see them in you and you in them, then there's an issue at hand that you need to deal with. Community is everything because I think, again, living isolation, because I know initially, even though I had gone to school and had all that, background, financial background, because I wasn't part of community. I didn't even know. Not only was I gonna go on to a situation like this, my neighbors, people from church, people from my community were going through the same hardships and coming together to talk about it, to find common resolutions really helped us build community. So definitely, you cannot live in isolation. Isolation kills. Again, because when you're isolated, you think you are the only one. You think nobody else is going through what you're going through, and it doesn't give you an opportunity to receive, which is an important thing. Service, you have to be able to receive it, but also it doesn't give you an opportunity to give because it's give and take. Being a servant leader, I love to give, but also to I've learned over the years that it's very important to position myself to receive. And you cannot receive if you are isolated, if you're not part of community. And it's everything. There are those perhaps who are watching here. If you're watching and you're someone who believes in a higher power and you believe in something greater than you, it's not enough to just be at home kind of figuring out on your own. Come in and being part of a community, talking to other people, creating a group on your own. Reaching out to your neighbors, saying like, "Hey, I have something that I would like to share." That's why I do my show, Let's Talk Money with Friends. Folks have asked me, friends and others have asked me, "Why do you do that show?" Well, I feel like I have a lot to share, and how useful are not it would be not useful for me to just hold on to everything that I have in my heart, on my heart, and just like that share with other people. And it's always amazing when someone text me or email me and saying, "Gabrielle, thank you so much. What you just shared here really impacted me." So when we meet together with the community organizing group that we are part of, and we are part of a community because typically every week, twice a week, we have 100 people, 50 people sometimes gathered together. It's amazing how a hug, everything is gonna be all right. I know you're such an encourager, David. You always tell me everything's gonna be all right. Especially, you're so smart with all the stuff that you know. You tell us, everything's gonna be all right. I can see it in your future. I can see what's happening to you. It's encouraging, and that's what community is all about.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
If it weren't for you, I might have forgot to mention. And one of them is from the Masters of Wisdom perspective, the only real sin is the sin of separation. And that's when we fail to see God in our brethren. We fail to see the divinity in our brethren, and we fail to see them or see ourselves in their eyes, and vice versa. And I should probably explain a little further. The masters of wisdom are not masters of anyone, they're masters of their own energies. They also go by the name of the Lords of Compassion and also the spiritual hierarchy of the planet. And they don't exclude anyone because all the masters are you and I, 100 years or several hundred years from now, everyone will become a perfected human being and a master of wisdom. And then you'll be helping out people like me who are still here on Earth trying to figure things out. So speaking of things here on Earth and changing, how, Gabrielle, do you see, how did you see COVID as a shift for the world in terms of service and whatnot?
Yeah, definitely. It gives many an opportunity to serve. Because of the fact that it was a pandemic and so many families were impacted, even the hospital level, the healthcare, it was an overwhelming situation. I remember being here. Now, to think about it, we actually lived through this, and I lost a couple family members because of COVID. So I know it, definitely we have that reference when we think of COVID. But COVID gave us an opportunity to again see how important community is, because I know for me, I was on the phone reaching out to families who were going out of their minds, thinking that, how am I gonna pay the bill? How am I gonna pay this? How am I gonna be, am I gonna get evicted? Am I gonna lose my home? Just being able to reach out to them to say, no, you have community. We are here for you, and there are resources available. And we're gonna go to the state house and demand that our legislative bodies, the legislators, they do something to help community. And it was empowering, because had I known the same thing, I think in 2008, we didn't have that type of a cohesive, forceful coalition to fight. But with COVID, we actually did so much better than we did in 2028. And therefore, the stress and the challenges that families were facing, they were able to face them a little bit with less stress and less, I would say they were able to face them a lot better because of the fact that immediately when this started, so opportunities and access to fundings, access to what do you call them? The different aids that they have available, access to these things were available to community members. And because of that, it was so much better for them. And I know there are some folk families right now, because we work in housing, who are still experiencing the aftermath, because some of them did fall behind on their mortgages and rent. And now we've gone to the state, we've gone to housing court, and we see that there are some families who are getting evicted now because they had gone behind on their rents, and the aid, the support that the government was giving at the time wasn't sufficient to cover all their bills. But you know what? For a lot of the families who are working with us, it's still much better because of the fact that they're part of the community, and we're fighting with them. We're standing with them. They're not by themselves. So definitely, I think, it was great for me, although it was horrible. So many families lost their lives, but I believe that the fact that we had community really helped alleviate some of that pain.
Definitely. And you have such a great grasp of this, Gabrielle. This show is sort of producing and unfolding all on its own. All I got to do is hang on for dear life. You mentioned You mentioned something important when you talked about the political aspect. According to the spiritual hierarchy of the planet, mankind's elder brothers, the masters of wisdom, the spiritual crises today are not in the philosophical or religious realms. They're in the economic and political arenas. That's where the problems are, and that's where they need to be solved because we live in a spiritual universe on a spiritual planet. Too often, when you say that word, people think of religion. They think that spirituality is the sole purview of religion, but it is not. And you could have, as you have demonstrated, spiritual taxation work, spiritual accounting, spiritual art, spiritual banking, which is what your training is. So these are the areas, economics and politics, where our focus needs to be in order that humanity gets those basic needs fulfilled that we mentioned: healthcare, housing, education, justice and equality, world peace, a clean environment. So, moving along that line, since this is apparently divinely ordained for this planet, part of the plan for this planet, but you didn't think this planet had a plan, did you? Well, and maybe you did. It certainly does. How did the divine step into your life and change it, Gabrielle?
As a believer, I do believe every single day he's stepping in to help me. But I know for this particular situation in my housing crisis issue, with my housing crisis issue, I was overwhelmed because I had never expected, as I said, with my background and my education, I expected that I would be gainfully employed, be able to take care of myself very easily, and I had made tons of money. So I thought it was just gonna keep going up from there. But I was young and I had not experienced a Great Depression like those folks. Maybe an older person would have said to me, "Gabrielle, we went through the Great Depression of the 1930s, so we know it's possible." Even though in school you learn about the cyclical nature of the market, right? But you never expect that to be impacting you or affect you. But it did. And when it did, I was very angry at first because I'm like, what is it that I need to do? What is it that I need to do? Again, not having understanding as to what, how the system works, the financial system, we learn about it, but we don't learn about it from the perspective of the community. So because I didn't understand what was happening, I was angry with myself and even angry with God because I'm like, I'm Gabrielle. It's been doing very well. She's been very good. How come she's going through this? We all do that sometimes. But luckily for me, I would say, I'm more than lucky. I'm blessed. I went to an event, a free seminar that was in Boston because I love to learn and I love going to stuff that are free. And because I was overwhelmed at home trying to figure things out, I decided to go see to that free seminar, Les Brown. I'm not sure if everybody's familiar, but Les Brown is someone that I've been following him since I was in high school. Actually, I used to see him on PBS, the local Channel 2 station when I was in high school. And I remember always looking up to him, listening to what he had to say. As a matter of fact, I had pursued education, pursued quote unquote greatness because I had listened to him and followed his teachings. And then when I went there and I heard him talk, he was talking, and I remember sitting next to this lady, and I'm like, I've done everything he just mentioned here, to achieve greatness because he's all about achieving greatness. I said, I've done everything. However, this is where I am today. What does that say about what he's teaching? And she told me, well, what he's saying is true, but you still perhaps don't know. Don't have all the information that you need to know. And she said, you know what? I'm gonna refer you to an organization, the organization that we both are familiar with. And this organization is gonna help you understand that aspect of the financial market that you're not familiar with. Because in school, you have all your degrees in business and finance and all that. that taught you one part. There's another part you don't know. You need to go and learn about that and see how it's impacting other people and how unknowingly it's impacting you right now. And I said, okay. And I'm a good student. So I went and sat there, listen, until I understood what was happening. And then, so to me, that was divine intervention because I never had met that lady before. The very fact that I even mastered the strength to go to a free event, knowing how I was feeling at the time, was even a miracle in itself. So definitely, God is always on time. The purpose you talked about, like there's a purpose for the world, there's a purpose for our lives. And I always believe, like ever since I was a child, I've always wanted to be in that purpose, maximizing that potential. And I know that all these things that I've had that has happened to me so far have happened because of the fact that I needed to be led to where I am today. More empathetic, more loving, more kind, and more understanding, and more willing to do more to help humankind and my community.
So, Gabrielle, I'm looking at the time and I realize we're running out of time.
Okay.
But we'll get in as much as we can. In
Yeah.
the last 15 minutes or so, we'll be entertaining questions from the audience.
Okay.
But if nobody calls in, we'll just keep talking. And that'll start in about 15 minutes. And that call-in number is, we just take a quick look, 888-627-6008. Again, 888-627-6008. So, and because I want to get to the part where we come into the present and some of the successes you've had and what we see for the future. So if we could just quickly go over. What's another one of my questions? Oh, what did you mean when you said earlier, housing is the cure?
Yeah. Housing again, the emphasis on the fact that when you're not properly housed, when you don't have a habitable, affordable, and healthy community to be part of, it gets very stressful. It gets very, I would say, overwhelming. I know, for example, one community that I work at in Boston. This one particular member, I'll talk about her, not her name, but I'll talk about her. She was already retired because she's 74 now, already retired at 65, had done all her years, was very happy with her apartment, and was planning on staying in that apartment until the day she's called home, right? And she's gone. But because of the crazy market that we have now, a new landlord came in to the community and purchased her property, the property she's been renting for years. He did that when he purchased, he was not coming to make friends. He actually came in to evict and raise all everybody's rents. And because her rent went up $500, she ended up having to go back to work. Now she's 73 and working the graveyards, I think they call them, shift, so that she can pay the additional fee. And as a community organization, we've been fighting with her so that they don't continue to raise her rent every year like that. Now it's secure because now, since she's gone back to work, she's had to call in sick because you can imagine. She was supposed to be retired and relaxed, being able to do whatever she wanted with her time. And now she's working full time, trying to keep up with bills. And we feel like if we had, again, habitable and affordable homes, social housing that families could afford, then guess what? They would be able to work the hours that they need to work. We all need to work, but again, be able to afford those apartments. Many households here in Boston, in Massachusetts, or even the United States, many of those who are renting are rent burdened. Their rents can be as high as 80% of their income. How can you survive? because after you pay rent, you don't have anything else. So nutrition is a problem because if you cannot afford to buy food, medicine, other things, even just have some fun. You know, many families that we work with are working two, three jobs just to keep up with the rent. So it's the cue to all of our issues because I just mentioned an elderly woman who's not physically not able to really, she's having all sorts of medical issues now. But what about the young family with young kids? Because mom and dad is working so many, are working so many hours to pay bills. Guess what? They don't have time to spend time with their children. And guess who's babysitting those kids or spending time with those kids? Television and social media. And that's why we have, especially in the inner cities, so many issues with delinquency because of the fact that parents are not as attentive because they cannot be attentive because they're busy working two, three jobs to pay. One bedroom apartment right now in Boston, in some of the not so luxurious communities, you know, working class, black and brown, international, Caribbean communities, a one bedroom apartment is over $2,000. And
Yes.
area medium income is not $50,000. So
So it
it's a
would
lot.
appear, it would appear that people can't afford to live here.
No, they
And
can't.
I think
And they
that,
are essential employees. Those
yes.
who are cleaning our, you know, they are working in the back of the kitchen, those fancy restaurants, the hospitals, all the places that we need teachers, essential employees, but
Yes.
they cannot afford to live in the community they are working at.
So, Gabrielle, I think we could all agree that the elderly should not have to go back to work just to afford a roof over their head, and
Correct.
that everyone needs affordable housing. And that situation, unaffordable housing, certainly isn't part of the plan for this planet. Part of the plan was the rights that I mentioned that everyone should enjoy: healthcare, housing, education, justice and equality, world peace, a clean environment. And also, another thing people don't understand is that we're entering a new age. We don't want to get into the details, but the old age for the last 2,000 years was called the Age of Pisces, where ocean and a sense of working for a cause, whereas before that concept didn't enter into the mind of mankind. Now we're coming into the age of Aquarius, which is the age of groups, not the age so much of leaders and individuals. So we're all working together. And this will be for the next approximately 2,350 years, perhaps a few more. And that is why the institutions built up during the Age of Pisces are now collapsing. The energy that fueled them is being withdrawn. So what we need is what you've been talking about in this show. And so what I'd like to move to now is hearing about some of the successes that you've had as a community organizer, including with that person whose scenario you described.
Yeah, as a community organizer, what we do, the organization that I work with has a motto that makes a lot of sense. It's called the Sword, the Shield, and the Offer. And that motto, it's basically empowering people. The sword, as you can imagine, is very offensive, where you get to face your villain, I guess, because that's what I would call those greedy landlords. You know, again, for those people who are not familiar with the housing crisis, we don't think there's anything wrong with someone who wants to invest in the real estate market to buy properties, to buy a complex, to buy like a building to say, okay, I'm gonna buy that building and I'm gonna rent it out for income, right? It's okay to do that, but when you come into a community, you buy the property, and then all of a sudden, the people who've been there, you are raising their rent so high that they cannot afford to be there. That's when we come in. We say that's
Yeah.
not fair because the reason many times those investors are coming into a community is because the community had done the work. So going back again to the lady that I just mentioned, the other woman in her community, the community had done the work for over 20 years to bring a train station, a commuter rail station, to stop, actually two of them, to the community. And so because now they have a commuter rail, their accessibility to downtown, accessibility to certain places become very easy, right? Because of that, investors have found the place to be very lucrative, very promising. So they came in to take advantage, but they kind of came in to take advantage of the work that had already been done. The work wasn't done by them. The work was done by the people in the community. So we refer to that as their sweat equity. That station did not just happen. It was hard work for over 20 years, community meetings, community gathering, community this, to finally have a train, two train stops. And those stops are the very stops that are pushing people out of the community. So definitely some of the successes is the fact that we've fought so hard to keep those members of the community who had done the work to get them to stay so that they can benefit from their work. Because we know that nowadays they call it the financialization of housing. Financialization of housing is because a house is no longer a home. It's like a commodity that the investors are looking to trade like they do trading in the stock market. And
So,
to us, it
and
is wrong.
Gabrielle, I just want to interject something here. When we talk about the sword and the shield, we
Correct.
want the listeners to know we're not talking about fomenting violence.
No, no,
These
no. It's just a word, terminology that we use.
are symbolic, and the sword is our defense
Correct.
against eviction and foreclosure, and the shield would be the legal defense.
Legal defense.
What we're really fighting is injustice, but
Correct.
not too violently.
Yeah, well, we fight because we know, well, like you said, housing is a cure. The housing crisis is a violent crisis because people have lost their lives because of poor living conditions. Going back again to COVID-19, during COVID-19, although we had helped many families, but I know it was in the paper here in Boston, in a building, eight members of that of those of that family. Of the people in the building, a three family building, like a three story building, eight members ended up losing their lives in the very beginning of the COVID-19 crisis. So, because the property was overcrowded, if
That's
you
right.
cannot afford an apartment because the apartment's so high, the rent is so high, you cannot afford an apartment, you have to be with two, three, five different people who are not even related. 10 people are not related, are sharing one apartment. And because of that, because of the overcrowdedness of the property, then when there's a pandemic, when there's an issue, guess what? Everybody gets sick, everybody dies. Everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we definitely, it's a violent situation. It's not something to take lightly. And I
Yes.
think that anybody who's interested in fighting for that type of a housing justice have to understand that this is something that it's not pretty. Because when you
And
see where people are at with that, it's not. I know I've experienced it,
yeah.
housing insecurity, and
So,
the toll it took on me.
Gabrielle, this brings me back to what you had said earlier. Housing is the cure.
Correct.
So if you could give us your view on how your philosophy of service and sacrifice and loving others and helping others is catching on. How do you see this? Is it a growing trend? Is it expanding? Is it gaining in interest and popularity in this new age?
Yeah, definitely. It has to gradually happen. We cannot continue the way we've been going right now. It's not gonna, there's, we're gonna be, we are at a breaking point. We are at this breaking point where everybody's gonna rise up and say, enough is enough. Because how much more can you ask of somebody? How many more jobs do they have to pick, to take in order for them to pay for one apartment? So because it is getting to a point where everybody's impacted, once upon a time, you remember at our office, David, it used to be mostly folks from certain communities who would come in saying like, I cannot afford this. I'm being pushed out. Please help. Now it's everywhere. It's everyone. Different communities, different, nationalities, folks from different backgrounds, folks who have multiple degrees are saying like, I cannot afford the rent anymore. I cannot afford my home anymore. I cannot afford to be in my community anymore because these investors, outsiders, are coming in and pushing me out. What should I do? Well, we have to come together as a collective to find a common answer to the problem. And that's why now everybody's thinking, how can I work as a collective? I can no longer be isolated. Again, the isolation, it cannot continue to happen. I have to work as a collective because that's the only way I'll have the power, collective power, to find long-term solutions.
So, Gabrielle, tell me a little bit more about this creating community and why the synergy of neighbors and community is so crucial to you and your work.
Yeah, well, we're not islands. I know I was born in an island, but definitely I cannot live as if I'm an island, right? So we need each other. We do our best work when we're working in community, within community and with one another. Because what I know with my background and my experience with what synergy, you just mentioned that. One plus one is just one, but one plus one with synergy is exponentially greater, right? So synergy, stick a value exists. And even the Bible, I'm a Christian, I mentioned, the Bible say one can chase a thousand. One, a thousand. You can chase whatever you're chasing. Maybe a thousand bad landlords, a thousand demons. God knows about a thousand bad people or a thousand bad decisions. One can chase a thousand, but guess how many two can chase?
Yes, and as
10,000.
yes, you remind me of something else.
Exponentially greater.
You remind me of something else that Margaret Mead had said that, paraphrasing her, that you don't need a majority to change the world. Only it's a small group of dedicated people that has done that, that can do it and always has.
Yeah, well, you have leaders and followers, yeah.
Yes, and so it only takes actually, less than 10% of the populace to change their mind for everyone to change. It's as if the meter is going up really slowly and you're thinking, God, this is taking forever. And then all of a sudden it reaches a tipping point and
Yeah.
things change quickly.
Quickly.
So tell us more about why you attach so much importance to social housing. And we have 15 minutes left. And yes, we're going to open up the phone lines. And hopefully some people will call in, but we'll keep talking until they do. Go ahead, Gabrielle.
Well, again, to me, I believe since I've been part of community, I've found that housing should be a human right, is a human right. Again, housing is the cure. When you have families in habitable and affordable communities, the community thrives, and the community does so much better. We have examples, we have models. I had mentioned it to you briefly when we met one time, David, that in Vienna, Austria, Vienna, in the 1930s, early 1930s, they had a similar issue. As a matter of fact, based on my studies, their issues were the worst, the housing crisis that they were facing. And I think you had mentioned, you had referred to it. I forgot what you referred to it, but I can explain it. Like one, two people were renting the same bedroom. Two renting the same. Let's say I work in the morning, I rent it so I could sleep at night, and you work at night, you rent the same bedroom to sleep in the morning. Because not only was it expensive, but it was supplies. There was a lack of supplies, right? Supply.
Yes.
So therefore, not only people were not able to enjoy a home, but also to the community was suffering, right? Diseases and all that stuff. So therefore, the government and the people as a collective decided we need to put an end to this. And since the 1930s, in places like Vienna, Austria, folks can look it up. They've had what we call social housing, not even Section 8, not even public housing, but they call it social housing. And 80% of renters are in social housing. Can you imagine? Because it's not stigmatized. 80% of the population have decided they want to be part of this program because of the fact that it's not stigmatized. It's not like when you're in Section 8 here and people say, oh, you must be poor, you must be this, you must. No, because housing is a human right. Every young person wants to transition out of parents' house into their own apartment so that they can start living life are able to do that. And those who are older, seniors that we just mentioned, they're not being forced out of a community that they lived at for 50 years, like the lady that I just mentioned. Because guess what? Because houses are affordable and habitable, they're able to build community. And one of the things that I talked about social housing is the fact that as a byproduct, right? The side effect of social housing is community. Folks are able to have fun on Saturdays, on the weekends, because they're not working two, three jobs to pay for an apartment. Because guess what? No more than 30% of their incomes, whatever that income is, goes towards housing. Can you imagine a world in this richest country in the world to have families with children being able to have peace of mind, to enjoy
Yes.
life, to enjoy the life that they have with their kids who are growing so fast? If
Indeed,
they didn't have to
Gabrielle.
work two, three jobs.
Indeed, and that is what's coming. But before we talk about the future, I was interested in something you brought up about the past. It was even worse here, at least I think so, in America in the early 1900s than it was in Vienna, with the tenement housing they had so many immigrants packed together in unhealthy housing. And eventually it was condemned. But we never did quite get the social housing that Europe has. And perhaps that's something that we can look forward to in the future. And is this part of your, oh, before I go on to that, before I answer that question, I think this is part of your vision for the future. What we have learned in the ageist wisdom teaching is that once these basic human rights of mankind are established and part of law, that there'll be an explosion of creativity and genius in mankind that has been held back because of what you mentioned, because people have to work too many hours out of every day to consider, to contemplate, to ponder upon where they came from, why they're here, and where they're going. And in the future, people will not only have one job, but the number of hours will be reduced so that people can enjoy what you talked about, gathering with others in their community and enriching their own lives. So can you talk a little bit more about what your vision of housing is in the near future and further down the road?
The scarcity mindset that we have here, the richest country in the world, we have higher institutions like MIT and Harvard, but yet the people have scarcity mindset. They think that, you know, what they see in front of them, that's the only thing they can see. That's the only thing there is to be. So therefore, they want to gouge it and they want to grab it. They want to suffocate everybody. It's basically vampires sucking the life out of families to grab everything on the table because they don't believe there is more. There are more tables behind them, but they don't see it because they're fighting for the table in front of them. So that's why I believe that once people have the freedom and the opportunity to really live and be cured from the stress and from the anxiety of not being able to build community because they're fighting so hard to pay for rent and live, then definitely there'll be endless opportunities. Because I mean, like going back again to my passion now of watching near-death experiences, our sight, our eyes, like I remember saying that to you, David, our sight, like you see, I'm wearing glasses. When I was like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I wasn't wearing glasses because I was much younger. Our sight, right? What we can see is not even compared to what is, right? Because
Yes.
what you see is limited, just like the same thing. I think our imagination as to what we can do to build wealth, our imagination to what we can do in this world to, you know, it's so much more than what we are able to manufacture or what we're able to come up with right now. Because the young people who could have come up with those great new ideas, they're getting evicted every single month. Their parents are getting evicted. Guess what? They cannot even think. They're being born. Those geniuses are being born, but their parents are getting evicted, the stress at home, they're not able to go to college, they're not able to go to higher education. Guess what? They cannot maximize that potential when they come to this world to actually maximize that potential.
So, Gabrielle, what do you see that as looking like in the future? And before you answer that, one hint we did get from the ageist wisdom teaching is not only reduced hours of work and more automation, the menial jobs being taken over by machines, and that everybody being able to move up rather than losing their jobs, is the idea that in the future, mankind will actually be able to create via thought. Imagine that. Imagine creating the computers we're talking into now and all this machinery by the power of thought. It looks like we have 5 minutes left. So talk to me some more about. Oh, and I have another question after that. So allow us some time. Take another minute to describe your vision of the future.
Again, going back again to what I mentioned, the skies is not even the limit. I believe that because I believe in abundance. I believe like that scarcity mindset has caused us to kill and destroy one another. Scarcity about land. There's not even enough land, so I have to kill you to get this land. Scarcity about riches and opportunities and all that stuff. And for me, I feel like if we really give ourselves the opportunity, we will be able to see and envision. Again, being a believer, it says wisdom and understanding comes from the Lord. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Now, knowledge is not what you gain at the university level only. It's just a part of it. We were already born with everything that we need, but because of all the different pullings, being pulled here, pulled there. All of a sudden, as you get older, everything that you were born with gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. So, yeah,
Oh,
the sky is the
Gabrielle,
limit for us.
since we have so little time, we're going to have to push forward. And one thing I wanted to mention is that we have, well, looks like we have 3 minutes left. On this show, we talk a lot about, as I said earlier, the emergence of the world teacher Maitreya and his group, the Masters of Wisdom. They're here now at this crisis point to help humanity march into the future with a beautiful vision of justice, peace, love, brotherhood, synthesis, and a new civilization. And this is what the Muslims, the Hindus, the Christians, the Jews, and others see as the quote unquote second coming. But in a sense, it's for everyone. And in a sense, the joke's on us. These figures emerging and Maitreya are not religious figures here just for the religious. They're here for everyone, including the agnostics and the atheists, and you don't have to believe any of that.
Correct.
So tell me about your vision of the second coming as a Christian, bearing in mind we have 2 minutes left.
Well, I do believe that the spirit of God, or whatever we call God, I know for me, what I call God is already within us. And whatever that we're looking for, it's already in us. We are here for a time, for a purpose. And that our job is to really maximize our potential here on this earth. And the best way to maximize our potential is to love God, love ourselves, and love our neighbors. And in terms of like what's coming after that will come. But at the end of the day, it's what we are experiencing here that to me is the most important thing. The Bible that I believe talks about, they will be the coming of Christ, second coming of Christ. But every single day, I think when we do what is right, when we serve others, because there's even references to the book that talks about how when you take care of the poor and you take care of the needy, you've done it unto me. So does that mean he's already here? Because the poor, he's saying, if you take care of the poor, the least of these, among us, if you take care of them, you've done it unto me. So which means that he never left. He's always been here and he's within us. It's up to us to maximize that potential and
That's
maximize our greatness and our deity and the good, the love. Love never fails.
that sounds like a future I could look forward to. I'll go with that
Yeah.
plan, Gabrielle, any day. Well, we've just got a minute left, and I know in my notes here, some of the other we talked about, Gabrielle has walked us through fighting for justice, and also, as we talk about her organization, avoiding shame, fear, and guilt, and all that that takes from you, while embracing love, service, self-awareness, knowledge, and wisdom.
All right.
So, Gabrielle, thank you so much
Yeah,
for
I just
being on
want to
the
remind
show.
everybody again, please follow me online. Actually, the show is Let's Talk Money with Friends. I always say everything matters. Love matters. You matter. Community matters. Every show that I do has a matter because of the fact that we believe that if you do what you need to do, if you become better. As a matter of fact, last week we did a show called Better Matters. It's really important to become better and to maximize who you are as a human being so that this world could be a better place. Because
Okay.
it needs you, it needs me.
Well,
Love matters.
I want to be on your show too then.
Yes, definitely.
And it looks like we are just about out of time. Thank you so much, Gabrielle. We'll
Thank
have
you,
you back.
everyone.
And
Yes.
yes, thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you again soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Gabrielle.